Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Well, it's now a week on since the tragic events at Grenfell Tower, which I covered in the last episode. And this is just a bit of a follow-up, really. Don't often do this, but it's just been such a historic and truly awful, tragic event that I just feel the need to perhaps just follow it up with some more thoughts. So we found out quite a lot this week, and I just think it's worth mentioning a few points that I think could easily just be forgotten about after the next couple of weeks and months and eventually years roll by. Certain things just won't be remembered, certain small snippets of information that I just think are quite poignant, really. I mean, the first thing really to say is that obviously yesterday on Thursday, Theresa May announced in a sort of unplanned Commons session where all the leaders of Parliament and MPs were present, the findings of the current investigation, which is ongoing between the police and various authorities, paints a pretty grim picture, to be perfectly honest, of the situation. It turns out that there are around 600 tower blocks in the UK, in England even, that have the same type of cladding that was used at Grenfell, which means that it's essentially pointing towards the fact that there are potentially thousands of people living in these high-rise blocks in actual danger at the moment of being involved in something similar if, heaven forbid, a fire kicked off in one of those blocks. Now, they haven't gone into great detail about what they're doing, but behind the scenes I get the impression that there is a serious concerted effort going on right now to identify which blocks have this cladding and to get the cladding removed. I think there was even talk of, I think Camden Council in the UK, in London, already taking steps to remove cladding, and I think all over the country cladding is being removed. And interestingly, the media haven't really covered much in the way of footage of officials or builders or contractors actually taking down cladding. I've been looking for actual video of that and I haven't actually come across it, interestingly, which I would have thought would be quite a big story. I would have thought the media would want to touch that and just show shots of people ripping down cladding or whatever it is they do, but perhaps they've been asked not to, I don't know. It's just interesting. But interestingly as well, this morning the police, as part of their ongoing criminal investigation into Grenfell, have announced some pretty damning and pretty downright scary findings. The first thing they said was that the fire was caused by a fridge, and it turns out it was a particular model Hotpoint fridge, and I'm sure Hotpoint will come up with a statement soon. Didn't seem like a particularly old fridge either. I looked into the particular fridge, and it's listed on Amazon. It's not actually available for sale now, but I don't think that's as a result of today's announcement. I think it's just a discontinued line. But it didn't look like an old model. It looked like it was certainly no more than about 5 years old from but basically the design itself, the actual aesthetics of the actual look of the thing. So no doubt that will get recalled, and no doubt there's going to be an announcement from Hotpoint there, because that's obviously a pretty major make. We're not talking about some dodgy fridge that was bought in some second-hand shop here. We're talking about a pretty major company involved, one with a seriously good reputation, in fact. But also, the police announced that as part of their tests, they've discovered that the cladding was seriously inflammable. And not only that, but the actual, and this is new, in fact, because no one was really talking about this, but it turns out that the insulation, it was just as dangerous. So it's not just these cladded tiles that everyone's been talking about over the last week, the cheap variant, but it turns out that actually the insulation was just as bad, if not worse, in fact, if not worse at spreading this fire. And also there's indications that the actual way it was erected created these chimneys that allowed the fire to spread. It just sounds like everything possible went wrong, quite honestly. It sounds like at every stage in the process of these building regs being authorised and the work being done and the fire inspectors checking it and apparently the council checking the site over 16 times, everything possibly that could go wrong essentially went wrong in terms of the steps that they go through to ensure fire safety. I don't know. It seems like to me it seems like a mixture of total incompetence, and I still maintain almost an element of contempt towards the victims, the residents of that block. I just feel like they did things on the cheap, and I just think as part of this inquiry, this is going to get exposed for what it is, which is just a sick event in Britain's history, really. But anyway, I'm speculating because obviously we don't know for sure what went on. It could have just been a horrific series of miscommunications, and you've got to be objective about this. These things happen in life. I mean, I work in software development, which is obviously an entirely different industry to building, but actually I do see parallels, because a lot of the time huge mistakes are made in software and nobody spots them, and software is meant to go through a rigorous process of testing and quality assurance and all this business, and sometimes things just don't get spotted. But when it comes to life and death, the measures must be absolutely more stringent. And in terms of and basically it looks like things just went astray here. Things were missed, lots of things were missed. So it is interesting, and credit where credit's due. I did watch Theresa May's statement yesterday. Before it went on for about an hour and a half, and she was questioned from all sides. I have to say, my personal opinion on this is I don't think we're going to get a whitewash. I just don't think the government will get away with that. I think although this is a public inquiry and not an inquest, it looks to me like the government really are taking this very, very seriously indeed. And they're talking about the idea that victims, the families of victims, will be part of this inquiry. They will be able to cross-examine people, which I think was something that a lot of people were worried wouldn't happen, but it turns out it's likely to happen. And as well as that, they're talking about criminal proceedings as well. And the police have openly said now that they're looking at potential manslaughter charges, which I think is quite significant. I think the word manslaughter was not thrown around much this time last week, apart from maybe on internet forums and stuff. In terms of actual officials, no one was talking about that. But I think it's starting to look now like it's taken the authorities a week to really get a handle on this. But now they're starting to say, yeah, you know what, this really was a colossal, colossal screw up. And actually, yeah, it's manslaughter, actually. And I think that's what everyone knows deep down, because there were just so many levels of catastrophic failure here. And I think that's why I've been so engrossed in the story over the last week. It's one of the most tragic possible events, I think, that's happened in modern history in Britain in terms of an accident. I mean, we've obviously had terrorist attacks and all that, but just the actual significance. I mean, there's almost like at a primal level, the idea of being burnt alive in a tower block, not being able to escape from the high floors. There's something downright hellish about that image. And that's why I think at a primal level, it actually lingers in your mind the more you dwell on it, and the more you just absolutely want justice for these victims. And that's certainly how I perceive it. And I'm glad that we're seeing a government taking this very seriously. Quite honestly, I feel as if the government hadn't have taken this quite so seriously, there would actually have been public disorder on a very vast scale. And I think we actually almost got a snippet of that last Friday when protesters raided the Kensington council offices and managed to get in briefly, but were kind of talked out of, well, quite honestly, storming offices and things. It got close to being pretty nasty at that point. It could have been a lynching, quite honestly, from what I was seeing. But the police knew not to get too heavy-handed, because they knew, quite honestly, they knew how serious this incident was. And I think the police probably felt that, yeah, we got to give these guys a chance to vent their rage at this, because it is sick. I think it's great that the CEO of the Kensington and Chelsea Council has resigned, but there's another guy, Nicholas Paget Brown, I think his name is. He hasn't resigned yet, and I think he was quite a high-up council leader. And I think he needs to resign. And I think the fact he's hanging on is just sick. And I think he needs to just be forced out, quite honestly. Because that guy seems like part of the problem, from what I can tell. He obviously saw what was happening with the tenants management organisation not really giving a shit about the people, not doing enough, not listening to their concerns. And people, more heads need to roll, really, as far as I'm concerned. So in terms of all that, I think it's been promising. And they're saying that this inquiry, a report, a preliminary report, will be due soon. They've not given a date, but I suspect we're talking weeks, not months, because I suspect they know that I have to get something out very, very quickly here. And it looks like they're already coming to conclusions about the cladding and now the insulation. So, and ridiculously, we still don't know whether or not it was legal in this country or not. Philip Hammond said last Sunday on BBC television that who's an MP, quite a high cabinet level official. I can't remember what role he has actually. I think he's foreign secretary perhaps. But he said that it was his understanding that the cladding was actually banned in the UK. And what's ridiculous about that is people then came out working in the industry and said, no, it's not banned. And I actually gave the regulation reference number to the fact that it was authorised. So no one really knows for sure. And I think, unfortunately, we've encountered a grey area in the law here where it's basically subject to interpretation, unfortunately. And I suspect someone at some level of this group of people that put it up, a contractor, because all eyes are actually pointing to the contractors now, I will say that. I don't think it's necessarily down to the council entirely, although their stringent measures didn't prove stringent enough in terms of the safety checks to see what these contractors were up to. But ultimately, it seems that what's happened is the contractors signed off on using a particular type of cladding, which was actually fire retardant, the more slightly more expensive variant. And somewhere along the lines, they ended up using the cheaper variant and either didn't tell the council or did tell the council and the council just approved it anyway. And what's so tragic about this is the Grenfell Action Group, which was a blog, which is still available online now, and it's fantastic when you see it now. They really brilliantly written, detailed, very intelligent people, obviously a part of that Grenfell Action Group. And they were saying for years that they wanted much better fire regulation at Grenfell Tower, and they even asked when the refurbishment work was being done, they even specifically said they wanted this better variant of cladding. So these guys were really on the ball as part of the Grenfell Action Group, so on the ball, and they were assured that this cheap nasty cladding wouldn't be used, and it turns out it was used, which is absolutely scandalous. And that's what makes me so furious about this. They were lied to, essentially. But anyway, so that's that. And the contractors, and funny enough, they're all based in the south of England, which is where we're based. And one of them's called Harley Facades, and they had a PDF on their website outlining the work they did, and that was taken down very quickly. And now they've got a note on there saying they apologise. But I'm not entirely sure how the chain fits, but they had something to do with it. But I think the actual contractors that did the work were called Ryden, a company called Ryden, again based in the south of England. And they've been going since the 70s or so, and they're quite well established. And I just feel that they're not being targeted enough, quite honestly. I think something is fishy about their involvement in this. And I just get the sense that perhaps there's going to be a lot coming out about Ryden soon. I just, based on what I've seen in terms of their statements and that, they seem very, very shirty about this whole thing. They're not really talking about it. Whereas I think perhaps I think what's happened here is that they were ordered to, or basically told to use a certain type of cladding, and they ended up using a different type and didn't essentially tell people, and no one spotted it. That's the sad truth, I think, of what we've seen here. And say what you will about the fire regulations, and I mean, the fire service should have come and inspected the work and immediately deemed it unsafe. So there's been a catastrophic breakdown here in terms of that as well. But you can't necessarily blame the fire service. I think, unfortunately, this is all down to the cuts and austerity. There are so many factors here. And I think, slightly beyond the investigation side of it, I mean, I've been continuing to watch some of the videos on YouTube of actual residents talking about what they experienced at, on the day, and it's truly grim. And some of the information that is available, but as part of these videos, I think has to be part of the public inquiry, and I think it will be. And this goes deeper than just the cladding and the insulation. It's all to do with the fact that building regulations just do not seem to deem certain things that are basically the norm in other countries as being required in the UK. And I just think it's unacceptable. And there's always an excuse. Every government minister always seems to have an excuse about why actually sprinklers wouldn't have helped in this matter and all this. Well, look, of course it would have helped. The fire brigade have openly said if there had been sprinklers, well, for a start, if there had been sprinklers, the fire perhaps would never have even left the room where the fire started. It would have contained it, surely. And even if it hadn't, it would have slowed down the progress of that fire in all the other rooms. There's no doubt about that. I think it's a no-brainer, quite honestly. But moving on from the sprinklers, some of the accounts I've read and the YouTube videos I've seen, mostly coming from a guy called Joe Delaney, who wasn't actually a resident of the tower block, but he lived next door, and he was instrumental in getting people out of the tower. He had a key fob, and one of the things that's come to light is that the back door of Grenfell Tower was locked, and no one could get out. No one had a key, and for some reason this guy had a key, so he ran in and opened the door. And no one's talking about that, and he may have aided more than we can ever know, in fact, in terms of getting people out of there. So I don't understand why he had a fob and residents didn't. Perhaps he was one of the sort of Grenfell Action Group people that was given delegated authority to maintain the block. I think it's something like that, most likely. But some of the things that Joe Delaney has been saying have been truly shocking, and I see no reason why he would be fabricating the story. He strikes me as a very intelligent guy. And you'll see him on YouTube vids. He's the guy with a sort of shaven head and glasses, very kind of germane, very, very good speaker. And he was saying that one of the things that really has to be looked into here and was a colossal factor in why so many people didn't get down from the top floors, and it actually still makes me well up thinking about it, quite honestly, is that there were gas pipes on the stairwell, and the council insisted that they were going to put them in fireproof boxing or something like that, but they never did. So the Grenfell Action Group warned them. They said, look, this is dangerous what you've done here with this gas piping, because it was all done as part of the refurbishment. And they were told, yeah, it's a work in progress. We're going to add this fireproof protection around the pipes. But they never did it. So there were reports of gas explosions in the stairwell. And apparently the fire brigade had to actually isolate an erupted gas main before they could even put out the fire, the initial fire. And subsequent fires on the sort of lower floors. So that would have essentially deemed that stairwell inaccessible to a lot of people, because it would have been a fucking death trap. And I apologise for swearing, but that looks like essentially what we're dealing with here is a stairwell that was as dangerous as the cladding, really, and that's meant to be a way of escaping. And another thing that's come to light, which again, not many people know or have talked about, and I don't necessarily blame anyone for this, but it's just a nasty fact, is the water wasn't running for a lot of people on the top floors, because so many people were trying to run the water on the lower floors that the pressure couldn't handle it, and basically there wasn't enough water flowing through the system to reach the top floors. So people were being told to wet towels and put them in the doorways, and hopefully they managed to, because that would have helped alleviate the smoke issue for a while at least. But apparently the water didn't last long. Imagine being on one of those high floors, knowing that the fire is creeping up, and you haven't even got access to a water supply. It just beggars belief. I mean, the idea of that is truly, truly terrifying. And And I haven't really been able to get over it, really. I've kind of got a little bit too engrossed in this story, I must admit. But I feel that it's important to get information out for any means possible. So I'm hoping that people that listen to this podcast, we may get people that find these facts out that wouldn't have otherwise known about some of this stuff. Because this stuff will get forgotten about, like everything does. So, as well as that, there was a lot of firemen have reported, a lot of people on the grounds have, residents have said that they spoke to people, first responders, who talked a lot about a room, a particular room, where 42 bodies were found in one room. And I think perhaps the media have picked up on it slightly, but not really. It's not really been covered. But it's probably too grim for most media outlets to want to cover. I think the Metro reported on it, oddly, which is a sort of like low-level, kind of tabloidy style newspaper. Not really tabloidy, but just a sort of easy reading newspaper you find on buses and trains and things in the UK. But I've not seen anyone necessarily confirm it in terms of media officials, but I'm not, so there's a chance it's not true, but I think it probably is true, quite honestly, because residents have said that they were told by a particular fireman that was coming down from their shift and just chatting to people outside the building that, you know, what they were dealing with. So I think the picture that's been painted there is that people on a particular floor were getting desperate and they all huddled together. And essentially they all perished in the same room, because they all, I think probably what happened was the fire was on one side of the building, so people naturally fled to the far side where there wasn't a fire. And this is probably on one of the higher floors. And they were there, they were safe for a while. But no one could get to them. So eventually the fire got to them, came around the other side of the building. And I cannot get it out of my head, really, why there weren't any helicopters. And I really have actually wanted to get some explanation about that. And I haven't really come across anything yet. I mean, surely a helicopter hovering high above the block. I know that smoke was a factor, and I'm guessing the heat was a factor. Heat was rising up from the tower block. It's probably a seriously unsafe environment for a helicopter, quite honestly. But I just would have thought that we may have seen an attempt, at least, by a fire engine to perhaps just... Sorry, not a fire engine, a helicopter, I mean. To perhaps just hover above with a massive ladder dropping down, like one of those Coast Guard helicopters you get. And to maybe just get some people grabbing onto the ladder. But I know, I mean, there would have been a panic. You may have had people literally jumping on the ladder and missing it and falling. It could have been utter chaos. But I just feel like nothing was done for those people on the higher floors. It didn't seem like anything was being done. The fire brigade were desperately trying to get up to those floors, I know. And from accounts I've read, they couldn't quite make it to the 23rd floor or the 20th floor. I think they got as far as the 20th floor. I think one particular guy got as far as the 20th floor. But their breathing apparatus were basically running out of oxygen at that point. And it was a mission to get that far, that high. And the smoke, everything just overpowered them. The heat, everything. It was just insurmountable to get any higher than that. And even getting that high was going way beyond the call of duty for those people. And they were putting themselves in danger, really. But what else could be done? I mean, somebody was saying on a forum who claimed to be a fireman in the US that one of the things the US would have done in that situation was would have put jumping rings all over the base of the tower. And I thought, yeah, why the hell didn't they do that? And again, I don't think we've had an explanation, but I'm guessing it will be part of the inquiry. And I suppose people at particular heights, they wouldn't make it, even if they got on a jumping ring. It would probably still be like hitting concrete after a certain level of height. Once essentially you may have even hit your terminal velocity speed if you were free falling. So you would have just slammed through the jumping ring. But then again, maybe you wouldn't have. I don't know. But the point I'm making is, why weren't there any there? I mean, I think perhaps the falling cladding was a factor. It could have fallen down and actually caught a light on the jumping rings, or destroyed them at least. But even so, I just feel like perhaps it didn't seem right that there wasn't, again, no attempt at creating a barrier, some sort of net to allow people to just jump from the tower, see if they could make it. Maybe they wouldn't, but it's look, it's better than burning alive, isn't it? Or, you know, I don't know. But I just feel like no one's saying it, because I think we all feel that they were brave, they were truly brave, but I just feel like perhaps they didn't have the right equipment for the job. That's all I'm going to say. And I think the public inquiry might touch on that. One of the MPs in Parliament did raise that, and Theresa May basically said it's subject to the inquiry. She can't comment, it's subject to the inquiry. But actually, she did ask the Chief of the Fire Service in London, and they said, no, we had everything we needed to deal with it. There was no sense of, oh, no, we need more equipment. There was nothing like that, apparently. So who knows? Who knows? I'm just speculating. But I, just as a sort of, as a an onlooker, I feel like there were certain things that just seemed obvious that they needed, and they just wasn't there. But anyway, I'm sure there's an explanation. I'm certain of that. I have faith in our fire service, even though they've been hammered by austerity. So there we are. I mean, I wouldn't say there's a lot else to cover. It just looks like the inquiry is revealing things. It looks like we may have a criminal case on our hands in terms of the negligence. And we may have a manslaughter case. The cladding and the insulation were major factors, but also the actual block itself. They never listened to the Grenfell Action Group's findings, and they should have done. And the fact they didn't is scandalous in itself, really. And all of the things the Grenfell Action Group raised were factors in the fire, such as the stairwell, the gas pipes. And another thing that wasn't mentioned as well was that the actual, again, media haven't really covered this, but another thing the Grenfell Action Group talked about was actually the tower was quite inaccessible for vehicles because it narrow roads, too many cars parked in narrow roads, only one approach. So apparently it took the first responders quite a while to get anywhere near the tower block. And they had to drive over mounds, they had to do U-turns and go over hills, they had to drive up grass verges and things, they had to get residents to come out from nearby buildings and reverse their cars back just to allow the fire engines to get anywhere near the block. That's not right. There's no way that can be allowed. There's obviously a seriously dark shortcoming here in terms of the fire safety. I feel like everything that was wrong with Grenfell, let me rephrase that. There was nothing right in terms of fire regulation. It's almost as if every possible issue that could arise did arise, because it was almost like nothing was being checked. So the accessibility to the building alone is a major factor. And another thing is, why were the people in the higher floors, why were they being told to stay put? And again, this is subject to the inquiry, and an MP raised it. They apparently there were over 600 calls to 999 during that night as a result of the fire. So people in the block making calls, and some of the calls went on for an hour. Apparently, people literally on the phone for an hour, saying, "What am I doing? What am I going to do?" All this sort of thing, basically being reassured, I guess, by the people. And there must be some seriously upset people in those emergency call centres that, you know, hopefully they're receiving counselling and stuff for this. But why were they being told to stay put? It was obvious that after about 10 minutes, the fire was out of control and the self-contained fire rule of tower blocks had been breached and the fire was spreading. At that exact moment, they should have been told to get out. They should have been told, wrap a blanket around you, wet blanket, whatever. Just charge down that stairwell. Get out. Put something over your mouth. And I just feel that perhaps a lot of people stayed put, thinking that was the best policy. And then when they realised it wasn't, it was too late. And I really hate to think that that's the case. Hopefully that isn't the case. Hopefully actually they were told to leave. But the thing just broke out so quickly. that in fact, even though that they've been told to leave, it was too late. Hopefully. But again, all subject to the inquiry. And I'm looking forward to reading it, because I will thoroughly read it. So there we go. And I mean, just I guess to finish, I mean, in terms of the actual numbers, they're still saying 79 killed. They're still being a little shirty about that, though. They're saying the number could rise, and they don't know for sure how many people are in that block, really, because there was lots of subletting going on. There could have been visitors staying in certain tower block, in certain flats. A lot of people aren't reporting people missing because they were perhaps illegal immigrants. So I think it's likely that number's higher. Let's hope it's not a lot higher, but I think it is likely that it's higher. There's a lot of talk online about it being a cover-up and that they're actually not talking about the real numbers. It could be north of 150 or so. But let's hope that's not the case. Let's just hope it's not the case. And I've not read all the accounts of the victims, but I mean, some of them stick with me personally. The Gloria Trevisan and her partner, the Italian architects couple. I just clung to that particular one, I think, because it was one of the first ones I came across. And when I first read the story, there was a sense that they were missing, but there's a good chance they were in hospital, which was the next day after the fire. And I remember thinking at the time, oh, I really hope those two have recovered, because I don't know what it was about. They just seemed like a nice couple, and they'd come from Italy. They started work at... they both worked for architecture firms in central London, very talented, master graduates, I think. And it just feels like they were let down by an entire country, quite honestly. That's kind of how I feel at the moment. Because they would have assumed that block was safe. Everyone in that block would have assumed it was safe. Everybody. The Syrian refugees, the working class people. It doesn't matter who they were. And a lot of them weren't working class, by the way. A lot of them were privately renting, such as that Italian couple. And they were privately renting for extortionate rent, by the way. Turns out it was something like $1,700 a month they were paying for a two-bedroom flat on one of the higher floors. And they were obviously told at the time it's all been refurbished, nice and modern, next to Latimer Road tube station, short commute into central London, etc., etc. Yeah, sure, sounds great. But you would just assume that it was safe. And instead it was a complete and utter death trap. Whole bloody place. It's sick. It's absolutely sick. But anyway, I think enough has been said. Certainly from me on this. This was, like I say, just a follow-on episode. And yeah, it's a grim... I feel like as a country, my final point on this is, I feel as a country, we deserve the National Day of Mourning over this. Other countries do it. Why doesn't Britain? In Portugal, they had 3 days of national mourning as a result of their recent forest fires, which have killed a similar number of people, sadly. But in this country, we just have this attitude where it's like, no, stiff upper lip, move on. I don't agree with it, I have to say. I genuinely feel that we needed a National Day of Mourning over this, because it was that tragic, that shocking, that much of a scandal. But we just don't get one. And even though the Queen said the mood was clearly very sombre, she said that as part of her birthday speech last weekend. I don't know. Many people might disagree with that. I'm just throwing it out there. I still maintain we should have had a National Day of Mourning, really, for this particular incident. Anyway, there you go. Let's just hope the inquiry comes out fast and exposes what needs to be exposed, and those who are likely responsible, whoever they are brought to justice.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.